Good to have you with us, everybody. It is Monday, January 27th, 2020. Hard to believe we're this racing through the new year. It's getting off to a great start, but we're thrilled to have you here listening to the podcast. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. In today's Hot Topics segment, we've got Scott Roller going to be with us, co-founder of VendorSurf. VendorSurf is an industry-wide vendor directory, kind of like the Google of how to find vendors in the mortgage industry. It's a real valuable service, and I just wanted to bring it to everyone's attention, so I invited Scott to come in and talk about VendorSurf. He's also now a sponsor of the podcast. But more importantly, it's a great tool for you to use. I want you to be aware of it. And I'll also get his perspective in the industry. I love hearing that. We, too, focus a lot on that in the first part of the year, January. And so excited to have his comments in the Hot Topic segment in a little bit. We're proud to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. You can check out the Industry Syndicate at industrysyndicate.com. If you're a lousy speller like I can be at times, industry, got that one. Syndicate, S-Y-N-D-I-C-A-T-E. And Alice, I almost feel Alice thinking, oh, come on, Dave, people know how to spell syndicate. Alice, you don't know how bad a speller I am. What do you mean? But you do. You see some of my spelling. It's terrible. Anyway, this listener shout out to, who do we give a listener shout out to? Well, I want to say it's fun. What Paul does, our producer and program director, he takes segments out of the various podcasts we've done and he posts them. And it's interesting how much feedback we get and how long and for how far back it goes. So February 4th. Last year, 2019, we had Jeff Bode on, who is the chairman of the board and chief executive officer for Mid-America Mortgage up in Dallas. And he made a comment that is continually getting a lot of feedback. He says, history may not repeat itself, but it oftentimes rhymes. That's a quote that is getting a lot of attention. It's really fun. We've got Chris McAtee, who I talked to. We're going to be working on getting Chris on. I'm really excited about having him come back on as a guest. We have Brenda Clem, a host of others. James Liu is in here making comments and reactions to this. So appreciate all of you. Mark Dameron, he's always commenting on what we're posting up on LinkedIn. But you can go check out the LinkedIn if you're not friends with me. Connect with me and you're going to get the notifications. There's some great ways. The nice way about that is you get to listen to excerpts. And so you will see something of interest. You'll get an excerpt and of what we're talking about. If you like it, then you click on a link and you can go and listen to the full interview. Very cool. Thank you to Paul for what he does to keep this front and center in front of so many of you. Several of you say, man, you post a lot. And I said, is it too much? No, we like it. Don't stop. Anyway, love your feedback, folks, on what we're doing here at the podcast, what we're covering and all of that. There's some real interesting information. Our good friend Mitch Cohn, who's Director of Public Relations and Marketing Communications at Black Knight, released some information that's really interesting. On Thursday, Freddie Mac's 30-year rate, as you all know, ticked down to 3.6%. I know that's key at that. It's the lowest levels at that time in 3.5 months. But here's the most important part. When we see rates tick down, and we're all anticipating refinances drying up in the industry, but it did cause for 9.4 million refinance candidates, potential refinance candidates, to come into the market. It's just a slight tick, downtick. So, I mean, our refinance is down. We'll see where that looks. But be sure to check out all the information. You can go to blackknightinc.com. Black Knight defines a refinance candidate as a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage holder with a maximum 80% LTV and credit scores of 720 or higher. So, who could save at least 0.75% on the interest rate. So check it out. A lot of good information that Black Knight, who we're pleased to have as a sponsor, publishes. Also, I want to say a thank you to our other sponsors, Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Also, I want to say to Finastra, thank you so much for being a sponsor. They're one of our platinum sponsors. They have a great product called Fusion Mortgage Bot. I encourage you to check that out at their website. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, great to have them as sponsors, as well as the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, as well as Ainsworth Advisors. Check them out, ainsworthadvisors.com, as well as KnowledgeCoop, great way to have a learning management system, as well as Mobility RE. You want to search for loan officers? You've got to check out Mobility RE, as well as Celebrity Home Loans, thrilled to have them. As well as Open Mortgage and Velma, Vidyard, VendorSurf, and AI Assist. special thank you goes out to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe. Andy could not be with us, but we have Rob Van Rapphorst. Can't miss the NBA Mortgage Minute. So, Rob, what do you have for us, friend?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, CFPB Director Kathy Kraninger provided a letter to senior members of Congress regarding the Bureau's plans for a revised qualified mortgage standard. The letter states that the CFPB has decided to propose an amendment to move away from DTI and instead include an alternative such as pricing threshold. Kraninger also indicated that the CFPB expects to extend the GSE patch for a short period to facilitate the implementation of the QM changes. The QM revisions described in the letter are consistent with detailed recommendations recently made by MBA. The CFPB is currently in the middle of a rulemaking process to address the QM standard as the GSE patch is scheduled to expire in January of 2021. MBA's IMB conference is coming up February 3rd through the 6th in New Orleans, Louisiana. Make sure to register if you haven't already at mba.org. This is the event of the year for independent mortgage bankers. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good job, Rob. Love those segments. Love the information. I'll be at the IMB if you want to meet while I'm there. Let me know. Love to see you. We got a number of meetings already set. This could be a great conference. There's some great segments. I'll be moderating and participating in a segment, and I think you'll find it very interesting. So check out the program. I'll tell you all about it. Don't want to waste too much time with the podcast air to talk about that, but be sure to check it out. We'll be there. Get registered and get to all these valuable sessions. You know, the question is, should you tie up all your time being at meetings? I schedule my meetings around the sessions, especially the general sessions, where I really want to hear what they had to say. And there's a great list of speakers. You wonder who they are? Go check it out on their website. Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
Red Solo cough. Stock Spear, you're up. We'll have no party. We'll have no party.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Ainsworth Advisors.
The sun set it on the great expectation for the Lunar New Year. Imagine 20 million people in the USA were quarantined during the Christmas and New Year holiday period. That's equivalent to what happened in China last week. Investors see a tepid global economy vulnerable to a pandemic and public health solution. So they run to the dollar, U.S. treasuries, and other U.S. assets. The bulls capitalized on the solo cough. Now the bears can only return if the world can proceed to stop all. Solo coughs. Solo coughs. Solo coughs. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Oh, good job, Les Parker and Gary Canterbone. I love that. Good segment. I love always how he ties in of what's going on in the markets. Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, when everyone gets concerned about where things are going, we run to the U.S. dollar. That's good for us. Feel so much for the other countries that are affected by it. But we're grateful to be living here in a U.S. of A. Love that. Did you see how they chanted USA? USA when Trump walked on the field at the Super Bowl. That was just, whether you love him or hate him, I just thought it was great how we see this country, the patriotism within this country. Thank you, Les. Great job. And check out tmspotlight.com and Les's daily newsletter. It's free. You can subscribe to it. Encourage you to check it out. Joe Farr, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, Dave.
Beautiful day in the neighborhood right here in Central Texas. What do we have on the calendar today?
Les was right on point. I know he did that late last week, but the coronavirus has been the market mover since then. Continued today. You know, looking at the market right now, it's been worse. The Dow's now down about 340 points. It's been 100 points worse than that. The 10-year Treasury's yield falling about 7 basis points. And, you know, it's all over the concern about not knowing where this coronavirus spread, how far it's going to spread and how much it's going to impact economic activity. It has, you know, over the course of last week and this, it's knocked about 700 points off the Dow. And, you know, the beneficiary has been, as Les pointed out, a higher demand for safe assets. The 10-year Treasury has fallen about 20 basis points over the course of last week and today. Mortgage rates haven't done as well as that there, but they are better by about half of that, 10 basis points or so. So, you know, it's an event that's going to continue in the marketplace. And, you know, we hope that the concern diminishes some, but as long as it's out there and growing and without a lot of positive expectations for the ability to control it, it may continue to have a big impact on the market. So we'll have to watch that.
Definitely.
So Dave, the recent activity on housing has been interesting. It's been mixed.
Yeah.
Last week, existing home sales came out for December, and they were very good.
Very
so. Quick note, the existing home sales measurement is to measure closings of sales in a month. So December existing home sales were closings for that month. This morning, the new home sales data came out, and the difference being that that's a measure of contracts signed. And
right.
Contracts signed in December were not as good as expected. It surprised to the downside. Investors expected an increase in December from November, and instead November was revised lower, and December didn't even match up to that revised number. So it's a bit of a change, bit of a surprise. And go ahead and jump to this week. We have pending home sales. Now, pending home sales is a measure more like new home sales, but it deals with previously owned homes. So pending home sales will be measuring contracts signed to buy previously owned homes. And we'll see if it shows less strength as the new home sales data did. So that's in the week ahead. So, you know, the uncertainty, as I mentioned, of the coronavirus is going to continue to weigh on the market. Look for it to impact things. As positive news comes out, we may see a reversal of the improvement that we had seen previously. So just look for a lot of volatility, I think, while this thing is, you know, people are figuring it out. During the week this week, we have a lot of data, and we have a Fed meeting. So when you look at tomorrow, we got consumer confidence and durable orders. I mentioned pending home sales. They come out on Wednesday. First look at fourth quarter GDP will come out during the week. It's expected to show a growth rate in the fourth quarter of about 1.8%, and that'd be down a little bit from the third quarter. Then we have the core consumer, core PCE, the personal consumption expenditures for December.
Right.
They'll come out on Friday. Brexit happens. You know, all the talk that we've had and all the concern
all
that the market's expressed, you know, it's coming up on Friday and it's hardly even an issue.
I know. Yeah. Isn't it amazing? And
it really is.
Friday.
I don't think much is expected from that. I think all the questions have been ironed out. You know, there's going to be some, you know, getting used to things. And I know both U.S. is going to get into a trade negotiation with Great Britain as well as with the EU. So all those things are going to create more activity, more things to do, and the chance for some market disruption, but certainly not the fearful event that everyone expected for so many years.
After all is said and done, there was just not much impact of it yet, at least at this point. We shall see.
We'll see. Could be a volatile week, but let's hope things become better known about this coronavirus and it is identified as a less significant event than what happened with the SARS virus, and that really was a bad event.
Yeah, it's also interesting, the impeachment trial. I was looking at some statistics on the viewership of the impeachment trial. Do you know it's the lowest? People don't seem to be paying any attention to it. They don't want it. Now, maybe with Bolton issue coming up here, there'll be a little more attention to it. It'll be a little spike up. But soap operas draw more viewers than the peace trial. Can you believe that? That's just that kind of thing. That's why that's probably not having a view in the market. Yeah.
After watching the impeachment hearings for a couple of days, I can understand why so few people are watching it.
Yeah. It's just, yeah. Anyway, could go on and on about it. Anyway. Joe, thank you so much. Good to have you here.
You're welcome.
We're going to take a quick break, run over to Scott Gordon of Open Mortgage, talking about the science of sales. Scott?
What's your story? We live in the information age. Anything you wish to know is just a Google search away. Information, however, is not knowledge and does not lead to understanding. Stories are what lead us to understanding and make sense of a chaotic world. To many of our customers and partners, the mortgage process is chaos. Agents, FSBOs, titles, closing, credit scores, debt-to-income ratios, appraisals, and inspections. Ever have a confused customer barrage you with questions? Answer a question only to have another and another thrown your way? Your customer is looking at the pieces, not the whole picture. This is your opportunity to tell a story. Storytelling increases information retention and understanding up to 70%. As opposed to a 5-10% retention from facts and information not woven together into the form of a story. In the coming messages, I'll be giving you the essential elements you need in order to craft the best stories for your customers and for you. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
Good job, Scott Gordon. Appreciate it. Check out Scott Gordon's website. And I should say Scott and Tana Gordon. They own the company together. They do a great job. And I love what they do in marketing. The marketing department is just such a good group. Anyway, shout out to them. Thank you so much for being a sponsor. Be sure to check out their website. Alice Alvey is here with us. So good to have you here, Alice. Alice is CMB, Vice President of Education Training at Union Home Mortgage. And she's got the legislative update for this week. Before we get into that, Alice, I'm thinking about Brexit. I'm thinking about the whole thing. Your mom's from England, is she not? Is she British?
Yes, she is. Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Nancy and I are going to go, my wife and I are going to be going to jolly old England here in February, flying out, I think, on the 12th. And we're going to be there for a week, and we're going to Broughton Hall Estate, celebrating a birthday of a friend of ours. And it's going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to it, so I'll be thinking of you, thinking, who do I know in England? I got to get some tips. So they call you and
Mom,
get some ideas of where to go.
Yeah, of course, when I go, I've been several times with Mom and family because I have quite a bit of family over there and in France. And I love the countryside there. So I'm not usually in London. It's often the... off in the hills out near Surrey.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're heading south down by the coast and then heading north up to this castle or this estate place where we're staying. It's pretty going to be pretty fun. But let's get back to U.S. here and talk about the legislative update. What do you have for us this fine day?
We have a few things. It's interesting because I was looking at how much has Congress actually done this year since they're kind of tied up with things right now.
Yeah, a little distracted.
All paying attention to other stuff, which in a way is a good thing, right, that we're not the focal point.
Yeah.
And there was only one law related to us in mortgage banking that passed in 2019, and that was the VA seasoning rule that had. In the 2017-2019, there was none. Because remember, for those of you who need a refresher, it's always a two-year window for the session of Congress. The year before that, there were two. The session before that, there were two. You have to go all the way back to during the meltdown, right? So between 2007 and 2009, there were 89 bills presented, and in that session, 57 of them were passed, and then the following session, another 33. So we ended up, during that time, getting more than our fair share. So we're very happy that we have very little going on. So the big attention is focused on, as Rob mentioned in his report, Kathleen Craninger, current head of the CFPB, reporting on the QM provision discussions. So she sent a letter to Congress, and that's been in the news over the last week. So essentially, they're at least listening to the idea of dropping a DTI as part of the threshold for would a loan be a qualified mortgage. For me, this is all still talk, right? It's great that there was a coalition between all the industries, including Credit Unions Bank and the Mortgage Bankers Association, that everybody got together and said, can we get rid of the DTI? But the fact remains is there's still a lot of discussion. I think the best news was that they are going to try and align the patch, right? So the fact that Fannie and Freddie have this exemption, they're going to align that patch will be extended until we get this solved, or until either Fannie or Freddie comes out of conservatorship. So out of all the talk going on between getting rid of a DTI or considering a seasoning component in this, that is all just fluff until we actually see something in writing. What I like is at least their target for all of this is that they're going to keep that aligned. If they were to split those two and we lost the patch, and we didn't fix DTI, we would really have some challenges to get loans through. So that's the good news, is those are going to stay aligned. And last but not least, Dave, you had asked about the CFPB CELA law case that is coming in through the Supreme Court. There was a friend of the court letter that was filed January 22nd. So this essentially lists all the Amici / friends, the people who know about Dodd-Frank and have the history, and it pulls together the whole briefing of the case. So that was filed, and the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments starting on March 3rd. I
March,
couldn't
okay.
guess how long those will take, but it's March 3rd. Yeah. And then we won't hear back on their opinion until probably at least predictions now are about June.
Yeah. That's
so
good.
That's
that could be a biggie. Could
yeah.
it be a biggie?
Well, if they do rule that it is unconstitutional, what happens to all of us immediately is these 18-ish laws that are out there that the CFPB inherited all would go back to their prior regulators. So for those of us in the industry, we'd be back mm-hmm. to, okay, I have to deal with HUD on this one. I have to deal with the Fed
yep.
on this one. I have to deal with FDIC on that one. You know, it would just all become split again until they solved and probably kept challenging things. So,
yeah. If you do the pro-con list on that, the Ben Franklin T-chart of the pro-con list, on that whole discussion, it's really interesting where that could end up. And, you know, we all complained about CFPB and how we came about and Dodd-Frank and all that. And now that we're here, it's like, okay, we're here. Going back to having, I have to go find that slide. I had a slide back when CFPB was forming, but they brought in, I think it was like 13 or 14 various governing regulatory bodies and put them all in CFPB. How do you unwind that? And go back
right.
to, I mean, it's just one of those things where I'm going, the complexity of going back is one, and we all knew that. It's kind of like, okay, it's like healthcare. I mean, when you try to go backwards, you can't recreate that. So I don't know. It'll be fascinating. One thing is constitutionality of this thing, and then another thing is what's the next iteration. So
the other part that would be a challenge is we didn't get a lot of enforcement then, so maybe that contributed to some of the challenges,
mm-hmm.
right? So when it's mixed in with the other duties of those agencies, how much enforcement do we get? And it would also change UDAP. So it would change that because that became a new component, and if that goes away, you'll hear a lot from Congress to kind of fill those any gaps, that's for sure.
I love the fact that we have so many new to the industry people that are listening to this podcast. We just had someone ask the question, what the heck is UDAP? They didn't spell it quite right. So we use all these acronyms. So Alice, would you explain to this new person to the industry and one of our listeners what UDAP is?
Yeah, and you know, even folks who are very experienced sometimes, so I apologize for that. I should spell that out. So the unfair, deceptive, and abusive acts and practices. So this was expanded, so UDAAP for unfair and deceptive acts and practices and abusive. So abusive was the new word that was added after the meltdown, after the Great Recession. And so that, you know, that according to some, as you look at the way if they unwind, again, depending on how much gets unwound, that particular law would be impacted.
Thank you. That person just wrote back and says, thanks, Alice. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Love your segment. I'm learning so much. So they all love you. They love the radio podcast, too. It's all the way through. But thank you, Alice. Really appreciate it. Say hi to Bill and Al and everyone there at Union Home.
I appreciate you
being a part of this podcast all these years. Over 10 years. Wow. So much good.
Yes.
Appreciate it. Let's get over to Alan Pollack, my good friend who has got this week's weekly tech update for us. Alan, how you doing? How's things in Florida?
Oh, I'm doing great. I actually, and hello, I actually moved this week. I'm at my office in West Palm Beach, Florida, and it went from 60 degrees to 75, 80. So it feels great.
Oh. I saw an article where Florida opened season on pythons in there, and they brought in all these. I mean, there was like 300 people got licensed to go hunt pythons, and you saw the size of these pythons. You don't want to.
Wow.
It was just, Google that one. Take a look at the size of these pythons. I mean, some are measuring 13 feet in length, you know, 60. I think the heaviest one was 64, 66 pounds. I mean, it's crazy. You look at a snake and how big that is and how many of them. And they're really messing with the ecosystem there. So anyway, I thought of you when I read that article. Stay away from the swamps.
Yeah, get away. So interesting stuff going on, right? Super Bowl week. I know everybody's waiting for the quick in the loans spot, Super Bowl spot they have every year. Well, this year, apparently, Aquaman, Jason Momoa, he's going to do it in the privacy of his own home. He has a microphone and a hairbrush. So that's all I know. So we'll find out next weekend or this coming weekend. We'll see what the big ad was. I don't know if Keegan is still if Keegan's still part of it like he was last year, but we'll definitely find out. So moving on, you know, Scott, you and Scott are going to be chatting a little bit later, and there's a topic that I'm going to bring up next week because today I want to finish off on financial literacy, but I want to talk about partnership, vendor partnerships. I was listening
That's
to the
good.
Breaking Banks podcast this weekend, David. And by the way, for anyone that doesn't listen to it and you're interested more in the banking side, you want to listen to this one. Anyways, they had a great topic just about strategy and vendor partnerships and do you partner and or don't you? And a lot of banks were looking at it as their strategy. And the conversation was about it really isn't the strategy. It's a tool or a way to get to your strategy. And unfortunately, there's a lot of small community banks and credit unions that have a lot of difficulty and they can't just go partner because they don't have the right infrastructure to support the partnership. So we'll talk about that next week because I think it goes way beyond just banks and credit unions and partnerships. So Scott, thank you for being here today and it'd be great to hear some of your feedback. So David, one quick thing in the news and then I want to talk about financial literacy. This one was kind of interesting. Qualia, they are a company. They're in Austin, Texas, actually, right by you. Popular company that deals with title insurance. They are a real estate closing company. And what they just created is a product called Qualia Post. It's a new solution design. It streamlines the lender's transaction. And so what they're doing is they're offering the automation of the post-closing process in a secure portal. And by the way, we've talked about part of this because of wire fraud and right all the other reasons that you need to have a secure post-closing, a secure portal. Well, this post-closing process handles the collection of all the digital and physical trailing documents that may occur, and it receives automated emails. It's got a whole workflow process built into it. So very interesting. Qualia, you want to check that out. You can just Google it. They're in Austin, Texas. So TD Bank. Right. This is getting into financial literacy. TD Bank did a first time home buyer survey that was just announced today. And what it basically says is, hey, first time home buyers are preparing to dive into the housing market this year. And they say that 75%, 3 in 4, admit that they're overwhelmed by the process. That's a big number, right? 75%.
Wow.
They said 88% believe it's a good time to buy a home and 52% are already active. And now here's the interesting part. They spoke to these numbers come from 850 millennials that are looking to buy a home this year in 2020. The ages range from 23 to 38. And despite an intent to purchase in the next 12 months, most of them have not taken the steps to prepare financially. Only half say that they have even started for a down payment. And only 53% have even reviewed their credit report. And even more, David, 42% said they've established a budget for their home purchase, but only 30% have even spoken to a mortgage lender. So when you think about that,
some opportunity there.
What we talked about, there really is a need. And yes, general financial literacy, but also on the mortgage side. So I was doing a little more research, and I saw Bank of America just actually announced a new video series for homebuyers. It's called the First Time Homebuyer Online Edu Series. And it's a 6-episode video on demand aimed at newcomers to the home purchasing pursuit. And it talks about everything from how to pre-qualify, how to find the right home, how to apply, even how to close the loan. Why is this important? Because we should all be doing this. And why am I saying it on a technology segment? Because we can continue to invest in every little feature. We can continue to invest in every partnership. But unless we provide education to the folks that are going to come use our technology, unless we make our technology work for those types of people, adoption of our technology and all the money we spend, is we're not going to see an ROI on that. So very, very important. And then just one last thing I'll end on, David. America's Bank has actually aimed out to reach 1 million minds. ABA started a brand new foundation this year in 2020, and they're calling on all banker volunteers to register for a range of successful industry-wide programs. Basically, what they're doing, it's called Teach the Children to Save. And they're asking a bank, and we have a lot of banks that listen to this podcast.
Yes, we do.
Financial institutions to go to a school and put time in and help teach them how to save, what saving's about, how to buy a car, how they're going to buy a home, and start the wheel moving of teaching financial literacy to our youth. So Lots of great stuff there. You know, we almost should think about, David, maybe you and I will chat a podcast on financial literacy and how we can help others. But anyways, looking forward to hearing about VendorSurf, and that's all for today.
Good job. Appreciate it. I was thinking about the Breaking Banks podcast. You're the one that brought this to my attention last year.
Yes.
And you said, especially we were talking about Finastra, and we're getting into their, thanking them for their sponsorship.
Yeah.
And Martin Herrig, who is the chief marketing officer there, came on, and you said, if you wonder, you should listen to this guy, Lincoln. You brought it on the podcast, and you said, listen to what the, if there's any question about who's going to be a leader in the marketplace, go listen to this. And you were so right. Things he talked about there is what we're seeing, and now the new trends are going so much that way. So great job on calling out Breaking Banks. Check it out, breakingbanks.com. You can go Google the Finastra one. It's a great one to listen to. And thanks. Appreciate it. Alan, good job.
Talk to you.
So, all right, friend. Have a good one. I know you got to run as well. Have a blessed rest of your week. Look forward to having you back here next week. All right, you want to get a hold of Alan, email him, Alan, A-L-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com. Thanks, Alan, for the weekly technology update. Appreciate you. Finastra, I just want to encourage you to go check out their website, look at their mortgage bot, their mobile app. Again, you can brand it around your fonts, you brand it around your color schemes, your everything. Makes it look totally around you. It's a straightforward app that helps, you know, banks, independent mortgage bankers, credit unions compete with the big banks out there. And I think the big, you know, companies that have like Quicken that have so much budget for their technology. So you do not have to be left out. Best of all, it's faster. I like this phrase they use. It's faster than a rocket. Check them out. Appreciate it. I can also go to our website at Lincoln on Lending and check out advertisers for all they have. Andy Schell couldn't be with us today. The Profit Doctor is out. I think he's speaking or training. I mean, you know, he trains CPAs or trains. He does a continuing education. I need it's either that or another webinar with the MBA. Whatever it is, we wish Andy and Teresa and the MBS team a great week. And Andy, we'll look forward to getting your comments up on the website. This ends our weekly update of what's going on in the industry. Stay tuned. If you're already dialed in and are connected in via the website, we're going to get right into our Hot Topic segment. But for those of you who are listening on a downloaded basis, just click on to the next podcast and you'll hear the Hot Topic segment. We break it into two segments so that the podcast, when you're listening to it on a download basis, broken up into two segments, makes it a little bit easier from a time commitment. So just move on to there. So without further ado, let's get into the Hot Topic segment. Today, we've got Scott Roller, co-founder of VendorSurf. VendorSurf is an industry-wide, a mortgage industry-wide vendor directory, and it's sort of a unique category all unto itself. And let's get the co-founder on himself to talk about it. Scott, good to have you here, friend. Appreciate you.
Hey, thank you, David. Good afternoon, and welcome to our listeners live from beautiful St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, I'm St. Louis, huh?
Yes. So got a little fire roaring here in the fireplace on a cold, wet day. So like a little fireside chat, I guess. But really excited to be here. I'm glad you've opted for the four-hour special edition today because there is a lot of ground to cover.
Good sense of humor. I love it.
We'll condense it down to 20 minutes. So,
all right. Yeah. Good deal. So let's get into how vendor sourcing and oversight has changed over the past decade. How we find vendors. We got Google, but man, I try Googling stuff out there and it's like, oh my gosh. So the results are just not satisfying. And there's a lot changed, especially when you look at the oversight part of it. So let's start off there.
Let's talk about the drivers of the biggest change. We're going to walk through there. I'm going to give literally seconds on VendorSurf. I'd rather talk about what's driving all the change and such. So it all begins with the 2008 mortgage meltdown, the gift that keeps on giving, said in jest, of course. So the sourcing model before the meltdown, the majority of vendor sourcing decisions were made by one person, one department. Back in the day at a top four mortgage bank, Scott Roller himself. I could hire or fire any vendor at will. Nobody asked questions, minimal oversight. A rather dicey model in my mind. I liked it, of course, for many reasons. It allowed me to be quick and nimble and very action-oriented and make timely decisions that I knew were best for the unit, but of course, clearly, those terms, quick, nimble, timely, aren't really synonymous mm-hmm. with sourcing anymore.
So, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, after the meltdown, the sourcing world changed forever. A couple things already talked about today. Dodd-Frank passed into law July 2010, a year later, the birth of a new regulator. Why? Because the OCC was accused of being asleep at the wheel and they let a lot of this stuff happen. They took a lot of the blame. In a postmortem review of the meltdown, it was deemed that a major contributing factor to the meltdown was just purely a lack of prudent vendor oversight, if any at all, in a lot of cases. There was due diligence by conference call, lenders and people out there turning a blind eye, looking the other way, not only on egregious acts, but illegal acts.
Right. Yeah.
So it's sort of a don't ask, don't tell approach. It's the vendor's problem, not mine. Well, that's changed, as we all know. So the outcome of that was, and has been still today, is an intense focus on third-party oversight and governance. You've got the OCC, the CFPB, the FDIC, the NCUA. You've got investors with expectations and others there. The OCC has especially got something to prove to try and mitigate a lot of the blame being faced on them. So hasn't made things easier for the rest of us, driving unprecedented costs of compliance. We're going to talk about some real specific examples today. I get a lot of questions in my travels around my clients and around the industry and events and stuff about why this, and some of those answers are going to be produced today. Lenders really pivoted to the extremes after all of this, sort of a belt and suspenders approach. They added policies and procedures and processes and many, many just hordes of people, entire new teams. The bigger banks spending multiple millions of dollars in this new infrastructure. Not everybody can do that, but so you can imagine the pain at all levels. Lenders shifted. Now there's a lot of people making sourcing decisions. So what that's done for vendors trying to sell their wares is the front door to an organization is a lot harder to find now. Don't celebrate when you finally get the contact information from the head of vendor management, because there may be 11 more of those that you need to uncover. So it's really an entirely different ball game. So probably the biggest and most complained impact is with all these extra cooks in the kitchen, lender sourcing decision cycle times have just exploded. We're not talking, you know, from a few more months, but a lot of times, depending on the complexity of your product or service, it can be 24 months or more. So,
so
I know
true.
Lenders out there, you feel this pain. You have to know that the lender side of the house feels pain too. It's very costly and very painful for them as well. One of the offshoots or outcomes of all this is we've seen a continually pool of shrinking vendors. There's less choices out there for a lot of reasons. And lastly, millennials, talking about change, they've been joining our workforce for 15 years. Many are influencers or in very hardcore decision-making roles. And for those of us in this business, we have to adjust, all of us. Whether you're on the buy side of vendor services or the sell side, you have to adjust. There is a misconception out there broadly that the millennial generation really impacts the lenders because it's a homebuyer population. Vendors, take heed. This impacts you every bit as much. So that's kind of, I think, the changes, David, from the past decade.
It's really interesting. You know, you mentioned about millennials. What are the impacts that they're driving, if any, at least in this particular space? I'm assuming that is driving a lot of the technology side, but is it across
yes.
the board?
Yep, I've got a lot to say on that. I'll be quick. So the events of the past decade that I just described, clearly, without question, the most impactful. A second close is the huge millennial impact on this ecosystem. If our listeners out there have not yet retooled their shops based upon millennial-specific traits and expectations, you must start today. Unfortunately, again, those headlines only talk about, wow, what a great buyer, home buyer population for lenders. But vendors, you have to understand the far-reaching impact. So let's talk about who these millennials are. They're also known as Generation Y. If you look at statistics from the Census Bureau and the Brookings Institute, you'll find that millennials are the largest living generation, 75 million strong for us. They make up a quarter of the total population, over 30% of the voting age, and almost 40% of the working age. Even more notable about the workspace, 44% of this population are minority, the most diverse adult generation in our lifetime.
Really?
So this isn't just a lender thing to figure out and capitalize on.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we have done, meaning we and my company, how we responded to this seismic demographic shift is we did not just adjust our business. We launched a whole new one, VendorSurf. It's the Angie's List, the home advisor for the industry, so you can quickly
Great idea. Great way to compare.
85 different vendor categories, pick your specific search filters, and instantly have initial on-screen due diligence right in front of you in real time. Narrow your list down to who you probably want to be talking to. So we launched a whole business and invested. Custom software isn't cheap to have built.
No.
So we doubled down, and we found people were just tired of static directories and lists and yellow page-like black books and beige book and red books and buyer guides and, you know, resources not leveraging technology, and millennials won't stand for it. So the real challenge that I want people to think about, this isn't about VendorSurf, it's really about an example to give to you, is how have you pivoted in your business? Many of you do the same. Millennials search online for everything. They're digitally dependent. They demand technology, immediate searching with immediate results, recommendations, next steps. Speed is paramount. They want valuable information. They want it right now. And it's all about shortcuts for them without sacrificing quality. So the question is, for all of you, what have you done to address these millennial things that they value? Technology, mobility, collaboration with like-minded groups, research and consuming vast amounts of content. You can't continue to rely upon word-of-mouth referrals and going to trade shows, basic advertising and cold calling. You have to meet these millennials in their hangouts on their terms. The impact, the overall impact, whether good or not so good, depending on actions you take or don't, is deeply underestimated. So you don't just sell to millennials. They came of age during the information age. They place a high value on content marketing. The other Scott from earlier today hit the nail on the head, storytelling. Content marketing is a type of marketing that involves the creation or sharing of online material that may not explicitly promote your brand or your product, but it's intended to stimulate thought and respect completely associated with you and your brand. So millennials, they want to consume this and take an affinity to you. They're willing to try something new, and they're just as willing to adopt it or abandon it fast. So keep in mind, innovation alone is not enough. You have to delight these millennials with things they are going to want to share and digitally inform others. They are influencers in their network. They value that role they play. So if there's a mantra out there that we need to listen to about millennials, their mantra might just be, hey, listen, lure me in with consistently good and useful content on desirable topics to me, regularly educate me along the way, and I might become a forever follower and a likely buyer if you solve my needs.
That's so true. So, it's excellent.
Yeah,
that's
so
good. I'm actually on your website right now as you were talking and taking a look at it. I encourage people to get over there. It's VendorSurf. .com, and you see all the different categories. We're part of it. We're pleased to be there and thrilled. We're driving a lot of our clients to start looking at it. So
awesome.
Both of you, from a vendor standpoint, folks, if you're not listed on here, be sure to get there, because as Scott points out, it's where more and more searching is going on, and why not get at one source that you can do it all on? Let's talk about when you're working and consulting broadly to this industry, what vendor-related trends are you seeing and the challenges that these vendors are encountering today?
Great question. The first thing that I will mention is it's worth repeating. I provided a little bit of color earlier, but it's sourcing by committee. Decisions are no longer made by a person or a department. Since Dodd-Frank, almost all procurement decisions from all institutions are done by committee, often 6 to 10 different people across the organization. Let me tell you positions that I regularly see on sourcing committees: vendor management, procurement, operations, legal, compliance, risk, operational risk, third-party oversight. and then maybe a few from the corporate mothership bank, legal, compliance, and risk from headquarters. So there is a lot of different people with a lot of different aspects and needs out of that. So that's one of the reasons why we came up with a search engine. A search engine enables all of these to go search on their own filters and come back to the table. So think about this. More troubling is most of these committee members have no experience and, frankly, no desire for the vendor procurement process. They were placed on this committee to represent their department's mission, and gaining committee consensus on even a handful of vendors to send an RFP out to might resemble a hung jury in a lot of cases. I've seen a lot of it. These committee members, hear this, they almost never attend an industry conference. Think about the roles.
Really?
Think about the roles I mentioned. The people on committee members, and I've asked a lot. I do a lot of voice of the customer, voice of the industry, and they rarely attend a conference. So you got to change it. What have you done to adjust to this new norm? How can you possibly get in front of them? These are the realities that you need to act upon. So that's probably amongst the biggest trends and changes we've seen. The other thing, David, and this goes hand in hand, changing and restructuring and retooling, vendor sales teams. Given everything we just discussed, we're helping a lot of vendors shrink their direct sales teams and really grow their inside sales teams, a lot more marketing content. Content managers, social media managers, bloggers, and guest writers. We also see this trend on the lender side. A third-party origination business is also business-to-business. We're seeing a lot less cold calling, a lot less direct, and a lot more content marketing.
From a marketing strategy point, those are some really valuable insights, and people need to wake up to that. That's good.
You really do. The world has changed. One of the results of this is we're seeing a constantly shrinking vendor pool. Some people have just folded their tents because the new environment that we drove, you know, what caused this new environment with the meltdown and everything we've talked about before, some people just can't hang. It's a world they can either no longer or don't want to play in any longer. So we have seen a lot of shrinking vendor pools. Think of this. Lenders are trimming down and slimming down. They just can't afford to keep a huge stable of vendors. The cost of compliance is just outrageous, and they've got to do more with fewer vendors. So in the past 2 years alone, we track every vendor M&A deal, and in 2018 and 2019, there were 80 M&A transactions that we tracked ourselves, already five in January of 2020. That is an incredible. It's one a week. And keep in mind, we don't hear of every transaction, and we're already tracking it one per week. That gives you an idea of some of the changes going on. Along those lines, and related to the shrinking of the vendor pool, there's a huge popularity in captive vendors, vendors and affiliated JVs. There's revenue streams there. There's we're engaged in many conversations in building such partnerships, and there's a lot of reasons why. Frankly, we have two major clients out there that are asking us to help convert vendor management to profit centers, and there's a lot of opportunity there. So just major, major changes that we've seen.
What are some of the advancements that our listeners can leverage for better efficiency and reducing cost in the overall vendor selection and oversight process?
Well, fortunately, after decades of cross fingers and toes, we're starting to see a major influx of service providers and new and intriguing stuff. So the floodgates have started to open a little bit, at least a strong trickle. So what we've seen is surrounding vendor due diligence oversight, we've seen a lot of new vendors and new products. There's a lot of online platforms that have software as a service, and these are soup to nuts. It can be holistic management of your vendors, from itemized task lists and to-dos to dashboards that roll all the way up to the board of directors, you know, the high-level C-suite snapshots and sound bites, which is very, very hopeful, holistic approach. If you're not there and you can't afford it, build it in. Do something is the message here. You've got to do something, or you're putting your entire business at risk. There's a lot of professional services continuing to be deployed where they're, you can outsource your vetting, and they've got risk scoring tools and ratings and rankings, and this is really invaluable if you think about
Interesting.
It.
Interesting. Yeah.
These organizations sort of sit in the captain's chair at the intersection of where lenders and servicers and vendors meet, and there's a lot of best practices sort of vacuumed up. So you're not just seeing one way of doing it. You're getting expertise from an industry-wide perspective. So I think it's important also to keep in mind that, lenders get one bite of the apple. It is impossible to get IT prioritization. If it's not legal, regulatory, or compliance-driven, stand in line for 2 years, and you might be able. So if you're not easy to integrate with, if you don't have API integration,
right.
That's table stakes.
Yeah, and that really kind of gets over into your perspective of the future. You work with so many vendors, and certainly you therefore have a you're looking up and down all the vendors. I'm on your website looking at how many you work with. We're thrilled to be there. Again, thanks so much for the opportunity, both our companies, Ainsworth, as well as Transformation Mortgage Solutions. But we're looking at what is coming as far as enhancements and innovations. There's got to be no one that has a better perspective on that than yourself.
There are attempts at standardization. We know of two industry institutions out there trying to standardize vendor oversight and due diligence. Mm-hmm. We're not believers yet. I mean, we're believers in the concept, but
right.
We think it's knowing what we've seen across the industry, it's like solving world hunger, and the only people that can make that happen are investors. You comply with this vendor overlay or no buy of your product. It
right.
won't happen without the investors coming on board for that. We see a lot of emergence of artificial intelligence, machine learning, natural language, chatbots, blockchain. There's some pretty impressive things going on. A couple examples in the space, we work with a couple partners right now that can convert every one of your documents, the contents, into data, making it searchable and queryable. You can document all your pockets of tribal knowledge and arm your entire workforce with exactly everything they need, one portal across every application. Hey, what's the lock expiration date on the Miller file? Or show me all outstanding documents on the Robertson file. Just ask it, and it's presented to you. You don't have to log in and out of a ton of different systems. So really amazing stuff. The key there is you got to dedicate the SME resources to make it happen.
Right.
It takes effort from both sides. The thing that I think we're most excited about, what is the biggest ailment, the biggest topic and fear in this financial services industry? Cybersecurity.
Yeah.
You've got to hear what I'm about to say. Nothing excites us more. You can now get widespread insights into your vendor vulnerabilities.
Really?
These are real solutions. And you can, especially cyber and wire fraud, in most cases, it's not the lenders that are being hacked. They're a party to the resulting problem, but it's third and fourth party vendors. So now
That's
you
right.
have some tools to address this, even all the way down to a loan transaction level. Do you want to know if anybody in this email string is an imposter or a hacker, business email compromise? Solutions exist today that will tell you that, saying, hey, notification to all of you, there's a hacker among us in here, and here's who it is. And everybody needs to lock down, and there's some steps you need to take.
Interesting.
Within minutes, you can request and receive current cyber risk profiles on every vendor that you have or that maybe you want to use. You can look them up individually, or you could submit a bulk file, and you can see exactly what hackers see. You don't buy a carton of milk without looking at the expiration date before you put it in your cart. Well, that same technology and a service is there. Monitoring, you can monitor on an ongoing basis. Has there been any change up or down in my vendor's risk profiles? Has anybody been compromised on the dark web? What about the most risky transaction of all, wiring funds to these purchase vendors?
Oh, I know.
Title and that you have no clue. It's Joe's Muffler and Title. Well, before you do that, you've got a tool. Go in and check Joe's Muffler, Title, and Escrow Shop and get a cyber report card and find out if he's A, B, C, D, or F. If he's not a grade you like, deny the request. Choose somebody to your liking.
Joe Farr still dialed in here with us. Joe, thanks for hanging in here. Joe, I'll go to you for a question as I read over and we answer some of the questions that have come in from listeners. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, my question, and it's just a need for understanding, how far can a mortgage company give you the responsibility to vet their potential vendors and they just make a selection? How much are they still going to have to do in their systems and their committees, and how much can they give off to you or the people that do what you do?
It's a fabulous question. Thank you. It's asked all the time because people want to stick to their core competency. And a lot of times lenders and vetting vendors is not a core competency. That's why a lot of times there's, you know, outsourced services. This is a mainstream service. You have no problems. There is no regulation against it. But the key is you can't just turn it over and not be a party to it. Mm-hmm. You have to oversee the overseers. You have to have your footprint and your executives and your boards of directors. You got to make sure there's dashboards and rules and everybody's playing in the sandbox and that there's awareness and control. But by all means, it's done. It's done every day. I can introduce you to people that do it very, very well. It's their core competency. They do it better, faster, and cheaper. You just got to stay in control of it and not drift away.
Thank you. It only makes sense that the work be done by those who are most efficient at doing it, and that's not going to be those committees.
True. Yeah, so very true.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go through a couple of questions, and we'll wrap this. One of these that must be a vendor that's looking at, how can I get my services listed on your vendor net? Is there a cost? Is there a free version? Or how can they work with you?
Sure. Great question. Of course, we love inquiries on our stuff. If you go to VendorSurf, like surfing, VendorSurf.com, it's a subscription base. The way that it works is think of Angie's List, plumbers and electricians and deck builders and roofers. Mm-hmm. They pay Angie's List to get discovered by people searching in their area for their expertise. So same concept. There's 85 categories of vendors on VendorSurf. You can look at the categories, and a lot of times we'll help you. We'll tell you which, hey, we've looked at your website. It looks like you would be a good qualifier for these 8 categories or these 3. And on the home page in the middle, you'll see something that says, see our pricing packages, vendor listing packages. It ranges from $495 a year up to $6,495 a year. The biggest difference is, do you need a lot more listings than the vendor next to you? And in the $64.95, we do a lot of content marketing on your behalf. We are a brand ambassador for you. So you reach out to us. We're easily found in the Contact Us portion. Reach out. We'll certainly don't expect a salesy sales show. We're operations and strategy people. We'll help you see what's there, but we're not your weekly stalker.
I got another question. This is from a lender, obviously. I know the answer to this is, does it cost us to go on and look? And the answer is no. And I'm making sure there's no cost to lenders searching your site, correct?
24/7, free is free. We don't even force you to log in. We don't force a registration.
Good.
There is a registration and a login option. And when you do that, we really enable some really cool tools for you as a searcher. But you don't have to do that. One of the things that we heard loud and clear was, I want to search anonymously on my time. If I search, I don't want to get a call from vendors I looked at 10 minutes later.
And, yeah, in other words, don't be selling my information. Yep.
Yeah, and so we don't. It's locked down tight. And so if you register and log in, we track things for you that are helpful tools for you and you only in the future, like who did you visit? Do you remember? Do you want to save some favorites? Go back and look at them. Leave some notes as to why you saved them as favorites so you don't forget. But free, free, free.
That's good. Free to the users searching for a vendor and a modest fee for those of us who are vendors on the site. Sounds like a great program. Another question came in. We'll wrap it up with this one. How long have you been in existence? I'm on the site now, person says, and looks like it's really just getting started. Last question that they came up with is, how long have you been going? What is the rate of growth, and can we expect to see all the vendors on your system?
Wow. Let me answer it this way. We've been around. We just started our third year. So mid-December of 2019, about a month ago, we celebrated our second anniversary. We are now in our third year. We have roughly 700 vendor listings on the site. Keep in mind, one vendor can have multiple listings, so it's not necessarily 700 vendors, but 700 individual unique listings for services.
Right.
So we're not new. To the point, I'm a believer. I've drank the Kool-Aid on content marketing. You heard the other Scott talking about content marketing storytelling. We have 22,000 unique visitors, and we add 1,000 new unique visitors a month. We've had 200,000 page views in our existence. People come to the site, and they stick around for almost 5 minutes per visit. So they're not just coming going, oh, wow, and bolting. They look at an average of over 6 pages for 4 minutes and 52 seconds. And the great thing about it is they return to us almost 40% of the time, and that is a very high statistic for any online marketplace.
Oh, yeah.
To the content marketing piece, the popularity. If you're a vendor, you want to know if people are coming here. Know this. The power of content marketing and plugging that and giving you an imperative to do more of it. We've been alive for 25 months. And before the two-year mark, Google, Bing, and Yahoo started referring 54% of our traffic comes from them. They love our content so much. They do all these crawls of our site all the time, and they categorize us. And, you know, do we make it into page one of Google for this or that? 54% of our traffic comes from Google, Bing, and Yahoo.
That's it.
If they can trust our content, we hope you will too.
That's good, Sap. Good, excellent material. Kudos to you. For people that want to go to the website, it's vendorsurf.com. And if they want to call you and ask some questions, what's the best way for them to connect with you, Scott?
Email is Scott with two T's at vendorsurf.com. And my cell phone is 636-448-3713. 636-448-3713. Love to talk to you. Just be prepared. We're passionate about this stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's a great product. And a shout out to Ann McCulloch, who introduced us and who I've known for a good number of years, a podcast listener. And I'm really excited. She's a part of your team as well. So thank you so much for being here. Great news. I think it's something everyone should check out. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Dave, for letting us be a part of the best podcast in the industry. Appreciate it.
I love it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Folks, it's been great having Scott Roller on, who is a co-founder of VendorSurf. Again, check out their website. Be sure to tell your colleagues and those in the industry about our podcast. We've grown virally over the years, over 500,000 downloads and growing like crazy. It's really fun. Next week, we've got Logan Motoshami coming back. He'll be here with us live, and he's going to give us some very interesting information about the mortgage industry, where he sees it going for 2020, as well as housing. So he'll be sharing his 2020 economic and housing. Be sure to come back here next week. Again, thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, the MBA, the Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, CMLA, Ainsworth Advisors, Knowledge Group, Mobility RE, Celebrity Home Loans, Open Mortgage, Velma, Vidyard, VendorSurf, and AI Assist. Folks, great to have you with us. Have a great week, and look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.